radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Firehouse.com's coverage of the 2010 Fire and EMS Safety, Health, and Survival Week is brought to you by Globe Firefighter Suits and DuPont, two key players committed to firefighter safety year-round. Learn more about Globe and DuPont at globefiresuits.com/globe or by clicking on the ads on the podcast player page.
Hello, this is Rich Gassaway, host of the Leader's Toolbox. This year's Fire EMS Safety, Health, and Survival Week theme is Fit for Duty. The topic that I would like to address is drug and alcohol use in the fire service. We'd like to think, and maybe hope, that we would not have a problem with drugs and alcohol in our organizations. But to think so might be naive. We are, as the fire service, simply a subset of society, which means our members and our organizations are susceptible to having drug and alcohol issues the same as any other profession. Some might even argue that our high-stress work environments might even make fire and EMS workers even more prone to abuse drugs or alcohol as a coping mechanism. Regardless of the cause, drugs and alcohol use issues can pose some serious health and safety concerns for our organizations and for our members. I'm not a person who likes to dwell a whole lot on statistics, but as you research drug and alcohol use in the workplace, there's some pretty concerning, maybe even disturbing, statistics about drug and alcohol use. For example, America accounts for 5% of the world's population, but consumes 60% of the world's illicit drugs. There are estimated 18 million alcoholics and nearly 20 million people who use marijuana on a regular basis. When you think about it, those are some pretty concerning statistics. 74% of all illegal alcohol and drug use is done by people who are employed full-time or part-time. So if you think about it, well, it's just the people who are unemployed or down on their luck. Not statistically, it's about three-quarters of those people are gainfully employed. About 10% of all drug and alcohol work use occurs on the work site. And if you think about it, that is pretty significant. About 64% of all the drug and alcohol abuse that occurs is alcohol related, and I think that in the fire and EMS service, we certainly see our share of alcohol use in social settings. I'm certainly not opposed to that and not advocating that the police and fire and EMS workers not partake in the use of alcohol in social settings. But as we're addressing this topic, we're talking about abuse, not use. As it relates to how this affects us at work, about four times more likely to have an injury if you are a drug or alcohol abuser on the job. And those occasions where somebody is at work impaired is where it's very concerning for the safety of their coworkers. I recall having read a study where they had tested pilots, airline pilots, in a study that was designed to talk about the abuse of alcohol by airline pilots. And this, as I recall, came from the New England Journal of Medicine in the early 90s. And they had the test involved pilots performing tasks in their in-flight simulation. And they had them perform those tasks when they were unimpaired, and then they had them perform the tasks when they were impaired by alcohol. And when they had the pilots in an impaired condition of an alcohol concentration of 0.1, which would be considered intoxicated in most states, 89% of the pilots could not perform all of their operations correctly. So, you know, 89%, that's a pretty significant number of pilots that could not perform the tasks it would take in the simulator to safely fly the airplane. But as concerning as that is, the more significant, I think, for us lesson that came out of that study was they took those impaired pilots and they brought them back to the flight simulator 14 hours later. So 14 hours after they had tested them in the impaired state, they brought them back and all the alcohol would have had time to have left their system 14 hours later, and 68% of the pilots still could not perform all of their tasks to safely fly the airplane correctly. 68% of them. So this is kind of the point that I want to address is the residual effect of drug and alcohol usage. You might not have it actually happening in the workplace with on-duty fire and EMS workers, but if you have it occurring off-duty, that can transition or segue into dangerous work settings. When you consider this pilot study of 14 hours later, you can still have the residual effect of the impairment on judgment. So how do we address or prevent issues of drugs and alcohol in the workplace? I think there are essentially a five-step process to help manage drug and alcohol use in the workplace. First, if you have an employee right now or a coworker that you're suspecting has a problem, I would discourage you from addressing that directly by asking them, are you using drugs or alcohol? Those kind of accusatory statements can cause you all kinds of legal issues. You can say, are you okay? You don't seem to be look like you're feeling well, or and ask them a general question about if they're doing okay and see if you can get them to open up with you. But you certainly don't want to directly accuse them of drug and alcohol abuse. But back to what I think the steps are to help you manage through the process of trying to prevent drug and alcohol situations in the workplace. First is you need to have a written policy. That policy should probably be developed in conjunction with your legal counsel in your human resource department to make sure that you cover your bases in having a policy that is both legal and enforceable and doesn't open you to liability. The policy serves as the foundation for developing a drug and alcohol free workplace. Effective policy should clearly state why the policy is being implemented. It should describe what kind of behaviors are prohibited, and it should clearly explain what the consequences are for violation of the policy. It's essential that the policy be shared and understood by everyone. In fact, I would encourage you to have the policy distributed in what I call a sign and return form. In other words, you distribute the policy and on a separate form have the employees sign that says, I have received a copy of the drug-free workplace policy. Because if there's a problem that arises, it's very likely that one of the defenses of the employee might be, I didn't know we had a policy, or no one provided me with the policy, or I was unaware. And even if you take the policy and you sit down with them face-to-face and go over it with them, if you don't have any documentation that they actually received the policy, they may suffer from selective amnesia when the time comes that you're having to deal with them with a problem. The second thing is education for all the members of the department. Provide all the members with the information that they need to be able to adhere to and benefit from a drug and alcohol free workplace program. Inform them about, provide them with information about what is addiction, how it affects performance in the workplace, how it affects the safety and health and the personal lives of employees, and educate them on where and how help would be available if they have a problem. The third step is providing some training for supervisors. That training teaches the department's supervisors and company officers how to interpret or what the policy means in its context, how to enforce the policy, how to recognize and deal with members who have performance problems that might be stemming from substance abuse. And I say might because a lot of times there's other medical conditions and problems and even psychological conditions and problems that can give the appearance that it might be drug and alcohol related, and in fact it may not be. So the supervisors, company officers, are not expected, at least from my perspective, to be able to diagnose, it's a drug or alcohol problem, and certainly should not put themselves in a position of providing counseling to the employees about what to do. That type of counseling really needs to come from professionals and not from peers. And as much as we want to help and we think we have good advice, it really is something that's outside of the realm of our capacity unless we have some professional training in this type of counseling. Alternatively, or in lieu of that, there should be the fourth step, in place an employee assistance program, sometimes referred to as an EAP. The purpose of that is to offer the members some free confidential service to help them, and even to help the supervisor, to help the employee having the problem, even to help the supervisor and the managers who are having problems dealing with employees who are appearing to have drug and alcohol issues. To help, so the EAP is to help resolve the personal and workplace problems. And EAP deals with a whole lot of things besides alcohol and drug abuse, but it's certainly one of the areas that the employee assistance is designed to be there to help with. Realize that, you know, the drug and alcohol issues interfere and impact job performance and the safety of that employee and the safety of other members of the department, and therefore it really needs to be addressed. The EAP is a mechanism that allows the employees, their family members, to be able to access counselors who can give advice, who can make referrals, who can provide assessments, be able to get you in the direction of treatment or other resources. They may also be able to provide training and education and consultation to department members and supervisors on an ongoing basis, you know, essentially holding small training sessions on how to identify the issues and how to deal with them and how to be proactive. So the employee assistance program is certainly an important part of how to deal with this problem. The fifth and final component is drug testing. Drug testing provides the concrete evidence that may force some intervention, which also may lead to disciplinary action. Drug testing policies that you develop have to be clear and in how it stipulates who will be tested, when the testing will be conducted, which drugs will be tested for, how the tests will be conducted, the consequences of a positive test. In developing your policy, your drug-free workplace policy, and your testing policy, I think you should consult with your legal counsel and your human resource departments before you try to implement something that might not be legally enforceable by local, state, or federal laws. You also have to consider your collective bargaining agreements. If you're union represented, drug testing might be something that has to be negotiated into a union contract, especially if it's going to impact or potentially impact the employment of one of your members. The drug testing policy should address whether the drug testing is going to be pre-employment, whether it'll be random, and if so, how random and how those people are chosen, whether it's going to be done for reasonable suspicion, what constitutes reasonable suspicion. You know, what signs and symptoms give cause for a reasonable suspicion. Post-accident drug evaluations. So if you know, you have an employee who gets into a vehicle accident, regardless of whose cause the accident was, whether it was a result of something employee did or if you know, they're struck by someone else and it's not their cause, does that give rise for drug testing? And then the last type is a follow-up drug test from a previous positive results. So in summary, to be able to effectively have a drug-free workplace, it takes five steps in a process that I believe starts with having a written policy, which is the foundation, and then employee education on the policy, what it means and what its consequences are. The third step, training for supervisors so that they know what their role is and what they should do if they suspect issue with drugs or alcohol and how to deal with it. The fourth step, employee assistance program, so that after you do suspect a problem, you have a place to be able to refer an employee to get some help and to hopefully get healthy. And the EAP also providing education component along the way in the context of prevention. And the fifth component of this program, drug testing, both or drug testing for pre-employment, for cause, random, post-accident, and follow-up. We, as a fire service, really hope that we would have drug and alcohol-free workplaces. I don't think we should let our guard down and be naive enough to think that that all of our employees would be drug and alcohol-free on duty or off duty. And you know, and I talked some about the effects of abuse off duty and how that can segue into issues on duty. I think we should be alert, conscientious, and very proactive in trying to prevent, and then very proactive in dealing with the problem if we have a problem in the workplace. This is Rich Gasway, host of the Leader's Toolbox, hoping for all of you to have not just a safe fire and EMS safety, health, and survival week, but your entire year, your entire career is one that is safe and healthy, and that we all are able to help each other when we suspect a problem with drug and alcohol in the workplace, and keep our organizations safe from the impact of drug and alcohol abuse.
Firehouse.com would like to thank Globe Firefighter Suits and DuPont for sponsoring the in-depth coverage of this year's Fire and EMS Safety Week. Globe Firefighter Suits and DuPont are committed to keeping firefighters safe all year with extensive product lines that can be found at www.dupont.com/personal_protection_global/en_us/index.html or by clicking on the ads on the podcast player page.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.